Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hey!
I'm sorry, do I know you?
It's been a while, I know. And I will try to keep my pneumonia coughing to a minimum here.
Well, fortunately for me, that's not contagious through Skype.
Phew! How's the snow?
It's really ice is the problem. Northern Virginia were kind of idiots about snow as it is. But then what ended up happening is we got a couple of inches, and then it turned to water and slush and hail, which then overnight turned everything into a crusty sheet of ice. So
that's fun to drive in.
Awesome. Yeah, I did not go into the office today, although my sister went shopping in the afternoon and said it was totally fine, but I wussed out and didn't leave the house. And tomorrow we're supposed to get like 3 to 6 more inches on top of the ice that's already there. So we have stocked up on all of our winter essentials and are ready to take it on. And by winter essentials, I mean we're baking cookies. and we just went through...
That's the only essential, actually.
Exactly.
It's just the cookies.
That, and we went through the downstairs pantry and found this giant box of Steve's Original that, like, I didn't realize, because I have... Well, you've seen my downstairs pantry, but, like, most people don't understand. We have a pantry upstairs, and then we have, like, the overflow, because I'm a food hoarder, and when I buy in bulk. So,
We have this in common.
Yes. I think it's very common in people with our history. So when I buy from Steve's, because I only want to pay for shipping once, I buy like massive quantities of Steve's Original Paleo kits and crunch bars and all that kind of stuff. And I only put a few in the pantry upstairs because if I put it all in there, it would be gone in a week. Like, it doesn't matter how much I put, they're just going to eat it. So usually I, you know, put a few up and then after a week I put a few more up and then whatever, but for some reason, this box got lost among the masses, and now that I found this massive box of Steve's Original that we haven't eaten, I feel totally prepared for snowpocalypse, zombies, whatever comes my way. Good to go.
So I'm doing the same thing just for the rain. I actually have been finding... People who've been following me know that I had a massive health crisis last week, and I was sick for the last week of working on the book. And then the night that it went to the printer, it had been, you know, a lot of late nights and long days and late nights working, even though I was really sick. And then the night it went to the printer, I only got 4 hours sleep, and I woke up the next day with my lungs full of fluid and running out of breath, just walking around the house, and my chest muscles very, very sore from coughing so much. And I joke that it's pneumonia. It may have been. I started taking inhaled steroids in order to hopefully avoid antibiotics, which I seem to have been able to do. I don't actually know if it was pneumonia because I didn't get a chest x-ray, but it felt like it, and I've had pneumonia enough times in my life to have a good sense of how it feels. So I've been finding as I'm starting to get more energy that that's funny. That's what I'm finding relaxing to do right now is bake. So I don't know if it's the winter weather or that sort of sense of, you know, not really enough energy yet to you know, go for a hike or something else that I would really like to be doing right now. But I've got enough to bake. So
pot roast
storm.
Pot roast and cookies is like all I want in the wintertime.
I don't like pot roast that much.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I guess I don't know.
You've never had Matt's pot roast. That's what's wrong with you.
Clearly, this needs to be rectified.
Well, I can't say that I blame you because we don't have a recipe. Every time he makes it, I'm like, oh my God, this is the best pot roast ever. We have to make like a formal recipe. The problem is it's just not pretty.
I know.
So
there's no way to photograph pot roast and make it look.
I'm like never in the mood to photograph it, but we're going to have to figure something out so that we can share this amazing recipe with everyone.
Pot. Look at this beautiful pot. Okay. Do you do it in a slow cooker or do you do it
Dutch oven?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not a slow cooker family.
I am not either. Every once in a while I'll do something slow cooked because I'm following somebody else's recipe.
Exactly.
But it's not a way I've ever cooked. Like I've never done that.
Yeah, I find that we get much more flavor in a Dutch oven because we brown it first usually and then we slow cook it. And I know that a lot of slow cooker recipes call for browning in a pan and then putting in the slow cooker, but that seems to me like you're dirtying two dishes for what you could get done.
My
in one,
slow cooker will actually even, you can actually sear in it, which is very, very cool. It was one of the reasons why I bought it. It's a pressure cooker and slow cooker in one, and you can sear and then put on the pressure cooker or and then put on the slow cooker. And I still sear and then pressure cook. I almost never sear and then slow cook.
Well, that's really fancy pants. We'll have to put a link in the show notes because I'm curious about
that. It's called an Instapot, and it is one of my favorite kitchen gadgets.
Speaking of show notes, look at this bridge. I hope that everyone checked out the show notes in last week's fun blooper episode. We made a bit of an announcement in our show notes last week that Sarah and I have joined the likes of many other awesome health podcasters on Radio IO Be Well Radio. So if you or someone you know is looking for either another platform to listen to our podcast or looking for kind of a streaming source for like-minded yet thought-provoking individuals, I would highly suggest that you check out the links to either last week's show notes, or I'm sure Monica will put them in this week.
Yeah, we can put it all back in this week's show notes, too.
So that everyone can check out our new Be Well Radio launch. I have to say, you know, we kind of, when Sarah and I were approached about this, we were a little bit like, I don't know. I mean, we've talked before about not wanting to do anything related to sponsors and that kind of stuff with the show. And we got an inkling of some of the people that would be also on this radio and that it would be free for everyone. And so we felt like, you know, you can go listen if you want to, but you don't have to. And then when they made the official press release releasing everyone, which we had no idea who everyone was, we had just kind of had whispers about like, well, so-and-so's talking about joining, but they didn't do the official announcement until they did the actual press release. And I saw all the names of people that were joining, like Rob Wolf and Balanced Bites Podcast and Jonathan Baylor and Bulletproof Exec and...
It was pretty much like, oh, all my favorite podcasts.
Yeah, it was like, oh, well, now I'm like so honored to be among
these people. Absolutely. Yeah, I had the exact same feeling. I was like, look at this list and we're on it. Yeah. Happy dance.
So for anybody who's finding us through listening to Be Well Radio, who usually listens to one of those other people who's awesome, we hope that you also find us to be awesome. But, so I wanted to mention that.
And just for our normal fans, this doesn't change our normal availability on iTunes or Stitcher. We're still in all the normal places you're used to finding us. This is just another way to listen to us.
Yeah, it's more like a radio platform. Like, I think of it as like a streaming Sirius XM channel, right? Like, if you're interested in this kind of health and wellness podcasting, and it's, you know, like, think about it. If you listen to Rob and Balance Bites and us, because we hear that from a lot of people, like, oh, those are the podcasts I listen to, then this particular radio channel, which streams all the time, you can listen to whenever on whatever device works for you. It's listed in the show notes, you know, what platforms you can listen to. But then because you're tuning in when works for you, you would probably be exposed to people that, you know, you don't usually listen to, or maybe a topic that you wouldn't have downloaded necessarily on your own, but perhaps piques your interest or whatever the case may be. So hopefully it just is yet another way to expose people to the health and wellness approach that we all promote, and that it hopefully it takes off and does well. I think with some of the people that have signed up, I can't see how it wouldn't, but
yeah.
Anyway, so honored to be on that. Welcome if you've come from that platform or you're listening to it right now. And to those who haven't, go check it out and see the full list of rock stars either in the show notes or on the site that will be linked in the show notes. So, did you listen to the blooper show, by the way?
No, I was scared to.
Oh my gosh. We were like, so Matt introduced it and it was funny because I had no idea. I literally didn't listen until Friday when it went live. I had no idea because he and Monica just did their thing. And, so I'm listening to it and he basically gave us a hard time because we're too professional. Like he was like, I used to get really good bloopers from the ladies and, I listen to podcasts and one of my favorite parts of listening to podcasts is bloopers at the end. And now they've gotten so professional, I never get any bloopers anymore. So he's instructed me that he wants to continue to do bloopers at the end of the show. And you and I need to have more silly conversations at the front and the back of the show. All right, dear.
Okay. Yeah, I don't even know. Like, how do you do a blooper? Like, you can't intentionally do a blooper. I guess if you were like a really awesome actress or something, you could, but.
Well, we used to do so many, like, oh, Matt, you have to cut this out. And we'd be silly about it when it happened, but we don't have a lot of that anymore.
I believe because it was requested that we not have so many edit points because it was so much work to edit the show. So could we please up our professionalism to not have so many edit points?
It's a double-edged sword for him.
Sorry, Matt.
Anyway, so I think just at the end of the show, we should just pretend to say something silly so that he can have it. I don't know. Anyway, it was pretty funny. It was only 6 minutes. Sorry about not having a show, but as Sarah indicated, she was very busy.
That was the night I was getting my book to the printer. And you've probably heard other authors talk about how crazy it is right at the end. And yes, it really is.
I think I gave you warning on this very podcast about that. And in the beginning, in the very beginning, when you like turned it in for the first time, you're like, oh, well, I'm glad that's off my plate. And I think it was Diane and I were on the podcast with you laughing like, oh, you're so funny.
You know what's really interesting, though? When I reflect back, it was a 13-month, I say it was a 13-month project, but let's face it, we're still going to do a round of edits before the second print run starts, and then there's marketing, and there's still the cookbook to finish. But anyways, it was a 13-month project. And when I think about what were the most stressful points of that project, one of them really was that last month of writing. And it was very, very stressful, very, very intense. And I think that you know, as long as the days were at the end, the work was not as intense. It was not as, I mean, it was long and arduous, but it didn't, the content didn't stress me out. There was this part in the first part of writing where, you know, I'm writing a book for sick people and I put a lot of pressure on myself to get it right and to make sure that every single sentence in the book I could back up with a scientific study and that everything that I said represented the best that medical research can tell us right now. And And that was, there was a lot of pressure. And then it sort of, I got to take a little bit of time off once it was submitted while it was being editing. And then that first round of edits was really intense and stressful. And then we had the illustration crisis where I then realized that I was going to have to illustrate my own book. And that was really stressful. And so I really kind of feel like, you know, the days at the end were really, really long. But I actually found the work that needed to be done more enjoyable. And so in a funny way, it was less emotionally intense, but just really physically hard on my body. So definitely learned a lot of really important lessons about how books are made and about myself and what I need to do to not have a massive health crisis every time I submit a book to the printers. And so one of the things that I've already done is request a release date delay for the cookbook. And I took a lot of pride in the process of making the Paleo Approach, that the couple of delays that we had in the release date were like not my fault. I mean, they were basically artifacts of the book being so big and so ambitious that, you know, every step for every person who was working on the book was taking 3, 4, 5, 6, sometimes 10 times longer than it would for another book. And so all of these delays were just, you know, in a way kind of because the book was so awesome. And I always met my deadlines, and I took a great amount of pride in that. And I think that that attitude is one of the things that got me into so much trouble health-wise towards the end. And so I decided that I am not going to have that attitude with the cookbook. And I am going to create some space for myself right now because I need it to get better. And I'm going to create some space for myself through the editorial process. And I've talked about this with my publisher about having a more protracted editorial process. He was really freaked out over how sick I was, which I think is good. We've sort of come to a very different schedule for the cookbook. So the cookbook will be delayed. It's going to come out May 20th instead. And I know there are going to be disappointed people, and I apologize, but I don't want to die. So that's really what it comes down to.
Good for you.
Thanks. Well, if I had known I was writing two books at once earlier on in the process, like, I wouldn't have done that. I would have written the first book and then taken a few months off and then written a cookbook. Like, I wouldn't have done this whole two books at one thing. And so, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and now I know to take a little bit more time writing a book before I announce what it is. If I continue at this pace, I will not survive. And I know that. And so I'm not going to continue at this pace. I'm going to pull back. There's other projects I want to work on. I want to do other things with my life. So I hope that, you know, I know there's going to be lots of disappointed people, but I hope that people understand that it's a choice that I have to make to preserve my own health. And if I want to be able to continue to make content for people that's helpful, then that's what I have to do.
All right. You ready to create some new content?
Some new content. Sweet. You remember way back in the summer when we did like 3 philosophy shows and we joked about how we had this like 14 point outline about different philosophy topics. And I believe we covered 4 of them in 3 shows. How about let's kind of pick up where we left off there and do a philosophy show?
I'm down. I'm always ready to be on a soapbox.
I was telling my mom about this morning, and she was saying, you guys are both really good at those soapboxes. I was like, thanks, Mom. I'm not sure everyone agrees, but we'll go with that.
Cool. So what's our topic? Are you going to have any science? We're just going to jump in.
Let's just jump in, because when we get into philosophy topics, there's always science that gets dropped in all over the place.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
All right. So, you know how our previous philosophy shows were in a sort of large way about dealing with some of the cultural paleo perceptions and then also some of the misperceptions about the paleo community that are out there. I thought we could maybe like continue on that train of, you know, paleo perceptions and sort of talk about some of the sort of lifestyle fringy granola stuff that so many of us in the paleo community do, like this whole like no poo thing and toe shoes and growing your own kombucha and using coconut oil for absolutely everything.
Hey, it's like Tussin. Do you ever see that Chris Rock stand-up comedy? Have I made this joke on the podcast already?
I believe you have made this joke, and then I made the joke about how it's like Windex from the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, mm-hmm. which you hadn't seen, and then we just had this like clash of mm-hmm. cultural references that don't match. Yeah.
But kind of do. And there's someone somewhere that knows exactly what we're talking about.
Yes. So, okay.
Yeah.
So and you're latching onto the coconut oil thing there.
And can
you feeling a little defensive about coconut oil?
No.
Is that what's going
just
on here?
Put some coconut oil on it. You'll be fine. Can I also say that there's, what about the irony in calling us crunchy granola when we don't eat granola? Like,
I never thought of that before. Mm-hmm. It's pretty funny. Okay, so I should say patchouli instead of granola?
I do not smell like patchouli. If I smell, it's my own BO. I cannot stand patchouli. Nope. Or lavender. Lavender is like...
Lavender's in everything. What
lavender is
that?
The 21st century patchouli, and it's not my friend. I'm not down with the lavender. I really like lilac. I really like rose. I cannot stand lavender. So... to each their own. However, if you currently are wearing something lavender to you, to me, it smells like a dirty hippie. Because I grew up in Virginia Beach, and I was literally called a dirty hippie because I made my own clothes and, you know, didn't
you
bathe and...
Dirty hippie?
Yeah, exactly. I told you I grew up a vegetarian in Virginia Beach. It shouldn't be a shock to you.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were definitely pretty crunchy growing up. So, yeah, but also in part, sort of the, you know, culture, because my mom was, you know, a hippies era mom, but also because we're really poor. So it kind of like reinforced all of the hippie, you know, grow your own alfalfa and stuff like that. But good times. Okay, wait. So... let's talk about this whole like obsession with coconut oil in the paleo community. Cause we cook with it. We, moisturize with it. We cleanse our skin with it. Certain people do hair treatments with it. Some people you can make soaps with it. Like we've got this obsession with coconut oil and you use it for everything, right?
I do like coconut oil. I don't actually use it to cook a lot of savory dishes because I find the taste a little too overwhelming for me, even when I buy the expeller pressed, which has less flavor. So that's why we use lard for our savory dishes. And then if something's got like a fruit base, like if we're sauteing apples or sweet potatoes or something like that, like with a slightly sweeter taste to it, then we'll use coconut oil for cooking. But honestly, we've mostly use coconut oil for skincare kind of treatments at this point. And, I mean, one of the things that I talk about really liking coconut oil is because it's a medium chain fat and it's really easy for me to digest. I don't have a gallbladder and there are very few, oils/fats that work for me that don't, upset my digestion. And coconut oil and lard are on a very short list, and they're the ones that I just happen to like the flavor best. So that's what our family usually uses. We do sometimes use ghee, as we've talked about, but we really try to stay dairy-free as much as possible for the kids because one of my kids is just really sensitive to casein. So
as a complete aside, I've discovered that the cultured grass-fed ghee made by Pure Indian Foods, as far as I know, they're the only people that are doing a cultured grass-fed ghee.
Mm-hmm.
They culture the milk before churning the butter and then clarifying it, and that culturing step actually degrades all of the casein. So it actually has no trace casein. And my youngest daughter, who is so
way more
sensitive,
allergic than mine. Yeah.
Way more allergic, she can have it.
Nice. Good to know.
I know. So it's nice because every once in a while you kind of want that butter flavor, and it really does have great fat-soluble vitamins in it. So for me, you know, it's not a huge part of what I cook with, but now it's kind of nice to have that as an option. I still like lard.
Yeah.
Lard's still...
So
we'll put some
links in the show notes to where Sarah and I get our coconut oils from Tropical Traditions.
Mm-hmm.
We either make our own lard or you can buy it from U.S. Wellness Meats.
I actually just ordered some yesterday from U.S. Wellness Meats.
Did you see that they are carrying chicharrones now?
The what?
Cracklins. What else do you call
them?
Oh,
yeah. I did see. Yes.
Yes, right?
And
I think they're barbecue flavor, so we can't have them, but...
They have a salt and pepper.
Yeah.
And I thought about it.
I have literally
10 pounds of pork skins in my freezer.
Yeah.
So I thought,
so
you know, really...
sometimes you just don't have the day to boil, dehydrate, and fry pig
skin. Well, my dehydrator properly. Takes 48 hours, so to dehydrate.
Week. Right.
Yeah. So it's like... a 3 to 4 day project.
Yeah. So we will be buying some of those, even though we know how to make them ourselves. Sometimes you just don't have the time. Okay. So coconut oil, lard, and the ghee, I think, is even available on Amazon, but they also have a direct site. So, back to coconut oil. So that's why it's also, and I'm sure you can explain and talk about this a little bit, really beneficial to the healing of the gut. And that's honestly why I also use it topically, because that, is it analgesic? What's the word, Sarah? The antimicrobial property of...
It's antimicrobial.
Antimicrobial.
It's different than analgesic. Analgesic means it kills pain. I would not put coconut oil in that category.
Yeah. No. But it's antimicrobial.
It's antimicrobial, and it's been shown actually to tighten up the tight junctions between epithelial cells in the gut. So one of the things that we know happens with a variety of foods in certainly the standard American diet, things like gluten, which can trigger the release of zonulin, which opens up tight junctions, but also things like sugar alcohols, alcohol, various proteins in legumes. One of the main actions that they have that causes a leaky gut is opening up what are called the tight junctions. And these are literally the points where the cells meet, and they form this, they have a bunch of different proteins that go from inside of the cell, through the membrane, to the outside of the cell, and they kind of tangle together and weave together in this very complex way. And that's actually what holds all of these cells together in a layer. And these junctions are dynamic structures, and they're actually designed to open and close in a very controlled way. What happens in a leaky gut, I told you there was going to be some science, is that all of these compounds will create signals in the cells that hold these tight junctions open, and it basically creates these spaces in between the cells where molecules can enter the body. And there's the part where the cells are supposed to control this, and there is, you know, a very controlled way that this is normal. What happens with a leaky gut is these junctions are left open for too long. If they're left open for too long, the cell can be injured and it can die, and then that creates an even bigger hole. And we actually know that coconut oil helps to stabilize those junctions and helps to tighten them up and reform them. So that's why it's super cool for leaky gut.
So I also want to point out, just like bone broth, you don't have to consume coconut oil on a spoon to get the benefits of coconut. Like, you can make soup, you can make sauces, you can make all that kind of stuff with bone broth. You can do the same thing with coconut. Like, my children will probably have a couple times a week a coconut milk smoothie. And there's coconut oil in coconut milk. Like, the fat of the coconut is the coconut oil. So when you're having, especially like a full fat canned coconut, or if you get like the Aeroid D brand, you know, if you get
one of those,
if you get one of those, I personally recommend, we can put in, I think it's Natural Value and Aeroid D are the only ones that I'm personally aware of that are BPA free and don't have any additives and are really creamy and good and fatty. Like, those are the ones that we use. But so if you're using those to make a smoothie, you're still getting the benefits of coconut oil, but you're not having to, like, you know, overwhelm your palate or eat a spoonful like crazy Dr. Ballantyne. So
I don't do that very often. there's
a time and a place for everything. Evidently molasses and coconut oil are sometimes taken by the spoonful in the Ballantyne household. So
very, very, very powerful cravings stoppers in my very technical Dr. Ballantyne language.
Yes. Yeah. So the other thing that is really great about coconut oil is that those same properties that you talked about inside the body work outside the body as well. And specifically,
plus the antimicrobial aspects.
Right. And so specifically, Finn and I, we've talked a lot about, have really sensitive skin. We seem to be sensitive to anything touching our skin, specifically any acidic food or foods that irritate the gut then also cause a skin reaction. So it's both internal and external that we have this skin problem. So we find that eating nourishing foods that we talk about all the time on the show that heal the gut, coconut oil, bone broth, organ meats, all those kinds of nutrient-dense foods that are really powerful help from the inside, but we also need something on the outside. And especially in the hottest parts of the year and the coldest parts of the year, we have problems because, you know, there's a lot of acidic fruit and all that kind of stuff in the summer, or, you know, Finn will eat like a whole peach, and when the peach juices run down his face, like, it's almost instantaneous that his face breaks out. So we have found that if he washes his face very shortly after food touching his face and then putting coconut oil on, usually he puts it on 2 to 3 times a day, like when he wakes up, before he goes to bed, and then whenever I catch him eating something juicy, like after dinner or whatever. And it has really, really done wonders for his skin. And it's interesting because a couple of months ago we went camping and I forgot to bring like a, you know, container of coconut oil. I felt like I was missing my foot. Like, it just was used to it, right? And just of 3 days of being away from it, you know, my dad said to me, like, what's going on with Finn's skin? Like, it just keeps getting worse.
Aww.
And it was because, like, I didn't have any coconut oil and we weren't, like, in the house to wash him up all the time. And it his skin is really that sensitive. He was, you know, they wanted to put him on steroids for his eczema before we went paleo. So the fact that we're moderating it with nothing at all now, and he doesn't have any issues, and all that we're using is coconut oil, like, that's why I tell my kids all the time, whatever their problem is, like, put coconut oil in it. Even things like bug bites and anything, I'm like, try it, because even if it doesn't work, no harm done. So for us, the thing with coconut oil, like the weird paleo shtick with coconut oil in our house, is simply that, like, we have multiple gallons of it, one for cooking, one for skin, and Finn and I are just constantly, like, carrying around our little glass jars of coconut oil, putting it on.
I kind of do the same thing topically. I mean, I use coconut oil for cleansing, and especially for removing makeup when I wear
it. My makeup remover. Yes.
But the other one that I really like for skin is, I actually make a homemade tallow balm, and then there's a couple of different places where you can buy tallow balms pre-made. I happen to find it takes like a minute to make it, so I make it's a balm with it's about half tallow and half olive oil, and then I add a tablespoon or more to a small jar of Tammany oil, And that has been really amazing on my skin. And my kids really like it over coconut oil because when their skin gets really dry, coconut oil will actually sting. And this just doesn't, it doesn't sting. And it's really because I'm using grass-fed tallow, it's really high in vitamins A and D, which are really, really good for barrier function. So that's my big fan. Vintage Traditions makes a very similar balm. Who else has a, there's another company that has one that's a tallow
I don't know,
based.
But Beauty Balm is my equivalent to that. So like when I go to bed at night, I put on Beauty Balm.
And so what we are trying to say here
is we're weird and we
is
a bunch
that
of weird
yes
stuff.
We do put coconut oil and other natural fats on our bodies, and that preconception of paleo is absolutely accurate.
Although I didn't start doing it in the beginning, so it's not a necessary requirement. I mean, no. I know plenty of people who are eating paleo and look at me cross-eyed when I talk to them about some of the natural stuff that I do. And part of that difference might be that we're moms. Like, a lot of the people that I know that are just doing the food part don't have kids. And I think a lot of people, like, a light switch goes off in their head when they start thinking through, like, formula and diapers and baby cream, like, regular baby butt cream, like a Desitin or something. When you start thinking about that from the perspective of your tiny newborn that you just grew in your whole body, and you're like releasing them into the world and you want to protect them from everything you possibly can, that's when you really start to think about, or that's for me, when I started to think about and care about like what I was putting in our home, because I didn't want it for them. Like, I could have cared less about me, but I didn't want it for them. And then once I was doing it for them, then I started branching out and I was like, well, if I'm cloth diapering for them, maybe I can use reusable stuff for me. And now I'm the weirdo that did a post about, you know, using a cup and cloth pads because that's what I do. And I'm saving the environment and it's less chemicals in my body and yada, yada, yada. So that's another weirdo.
That's another weirdo paleo thing.
Mm-hmm.
No poo's on the same spectrum.
Yeah, so no poo didn't work for me. I know you stuck it out longer, but no poo did not work for me originally. I went with my favorite product is Dirty Poo by Primal Life Organics, and I use that about twice a week, and then I do a shampoo conditioner with an over-the-counter brand called Organics with an X that doesn't have, it doesn't have the worst offenders of chemicals, but it's also not the best for you. But I find that once a week I just really like to wash my hair.
I use Morocco Methods.
And I did try them, and I get it. Like, it's, have you ever tried the Dirty Poo?
I haven't. It's like, I got totally hooked to Morocco Methods before
the
Dirty Poo came out.
The difference between the two is that Dirty Poo is literally like a container of dirt that you get. And it's, well, it's like clay and, you know, good stuff, but it looks like dirt. And you mix it into like a squirt bottle with water. And then you like squirt that onto your scalp and massage it in. And it's an effort. It takes like more time than just to, you know, lather.
Yeah, Morocco Methods is still made with clays, but it's clays and mushed up plants, basically.
And it's pre-mixed for you.
You squeeze it into your hand just like shampoo, and it doesn't lather, but it sort of has the same. I find it very fast, and I use it about twice a week, and I never use anything else. And granted, I had been no poo using baking soda and apple cider vinegar for a year before I switched to this, but my hair is way nicer on this than it ever was on apple cider vinegar and baking soda. So that's why I'm such a huge Morocco Methods fan, because my hair looks nice.
And Morocco Methods also has something that I do, which is super crunchy granola, weirdo paleo. I do henna on my hair instead of color it. So I was born and raised a redhead. I looked like Shirley Temple with my cute little bright red curls.
Were you like naturally a redhead?
Oh, yeah.
Were you born and raised a redhead because your mom dyed your hair from
the age? No.
Just checking.
No, I was born and I was like a fire engine redhead, like straight up red. And then as I got old, It got really...
You got old.
I got old. And the wrinkles started forming. The hair started getting darker instead of gray, which I shouldn't really complain about. But, like, someone referred to me once as a brunette. And I was like, that's it. Like, I'm not a brunette. No. And if you know me, you know that I'm not a brunette.
Your personality is definitely not brunette. Yeah.
So I decided that I needed to become a redhead again. And henna's been a really great source, because when I was dyeing my hair with chemical color, the red only lasts like a couple of weeks. Red fades really quickly. And I was putting all those chemicals in my hair like every 3 to 4 weeks, and it was awful. So now I henna, and I only have to henna like every 3 to 4 months. I mean, my roots grow in, but because I have a auburn naturally, like, it's, I don't really worry
it's
about
not
it.
Really dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the henna fades a little bit, like not a ton, but by the time you're at a place where your roots are longer, the henna's faded a little. So it's kind of blending together. And, I know that Haley at Primal Palette just tried the Morocco method henna and she really liked it. She's using a brown color, and she also, I think, used like 2 or 3 containers to get the pigmentation that she wanted. I personally found that in the one container that I used in my hair, I didn't get the pigmentation in the red that I wanted. I think I might try different colors from them, since Haley loved hers so much. Like, I might reach out to them and see what their recommendations might be, a little bit different, to see if that works for me. But in the meantime, I go to like a natural lady who does it out of her basement in the area. And she does it for $25, and it's literally like mud on your hair. So anyway,
so yes, we are totally doing the no poo bizarro paleo thing.
Yep. And so we're quite a few people in the paleo community.
Yeah.
But not everybody. Like, I know quite a few people in the paleo community who think that those of us who are doing these things are complete weirdos. And that's okay. Like, you know, you can do whatever. This is an ancestral lifestyle, but it doesn't mean that you have to recreate the past. So if it's not something you're comfortable with and you want to shave your pits, like, go for it. I shave my pits.
I shave my armpits. I'm not that granola.
Right. But there's someone out there who isn't, and that's okay. You know what
I'm
saying?
It's true. Yeah, totally. Well, and for me, what brought me to trying no poo in the first place was, you know, having really intense skin autoimmune diseases. I have 2 of them, psoriasis and lichen planus, and I was, even though my both had improved dramatically, I was still having flaking from scalp psoriasis, and I was trying to solve that, and going no poo was part of my solution. Like, that really did make a big difference. So, you know, for some of us, it's not that, you know, sometimes it's finding that a natural product actually works better than a chemical product. Sometimes it's about trying to optimize health. Sometimes it's just about wanting to be environmentally friendly. And sometimes, and it's okay when people decide that something else works for them. I think it's really important to emphasize that, you know, these aspects of a paleo lifestyle, that this isn't a mandatory thing. And this isn't something that that people are going to judge you based on whether you do or you don't do. And really, like, nobody should be judging you about your choices, period. But
just
it's
us.
Something that...
Let us be the people who get judged. That's fine.
All right. what I was trying to say was the opposite of that.
Being sarcastic.
You know, it's not ingrained in the paleo community. It's something that kind of happens out of the alternative healthcare movement and this idea of, you know, people find paleo because they're trying to find better solutions. And so people with that kind of mindset tend to also try and find better solutions in terms of cleaning products. Oh, that's another one we could talk about. Skincare products, hair care products. Cleaning products. Do you use anything crunchy granola-y?
If you were here, you would see me hiding under a desk. So, first of all, I don't clean. I'm really sorry, everyone. I have a really awesome husband who takes care of the home stuff for me.
Does Matt use crunchy granola products or kind of regular-y products?
Matt really likes chemicals to clean. Like, it's one of those things that we've just said, like, okay, the one of the few things that we've done is that we used to use Clorox wipes, and we don't use paper towels. We don't use, like, we use cloth napkins. We use reusable almost everything, but after seeing, like, a 60 Minutes episode once about how many bacteria are in sponges, like, we're kind of weird about using...
Throw them in your dishwasher.
Not every time. And then they're falling apart, and you never know. True. I just... It's the one thing for us, right? Like, it's just the one thing where we're like, well, we're doing everything else, and this is works for us. So we switched from Clorox wipes to, like, seventh generation wipes. So at least we're feeling a little bit better. I mean, we're still using something disposable, but... And then we have gotten, like, the Method cleaning products from... This is the best that we can do. The Method cleaning products from Target for, like, window cleaners and stuff like that, rather than using, like, a straight up Windex, which is, again, like, a little bit better, but clearly not, like, we're not making our own apple cider vinegar wash a la the Wellness Mama or whatever. Like, I know that it exists and I think it's really cool and I support anyone who wants to do it, but we also have a lady who's awesome who comes and, like, deep dives our house every 2 weeks and trying to find, like, I've used her for almost a decade. My family has used her for like 30 years or something. And I just, like, if I tried to talk to her about using a different product, she would look at me like I was crazy. So we roll with it. It's our one thing. I'll admit to it, but I'm
halfway. I'm half and half. We also have a wonderful lady who comes and does a deep clean of our house every 2 weeks. And she uses some chemicals, but she also uses vinegar a lot. So, like, she uses vinegar on the windows and the floors, which I really like. Although she uses, I think, some other chemicals in the bathroom. But I have fallen in love with Crisil products. They're probiotic cleaners. And so...
Of course you were finding this.
Oh, I love them. So I actually use, like, in all of my hand soap pumps all over the house is their hand soap. I use their dish soap for hand washing dishes. I use chemicals for the dishwasher. And I use their multi-purpose cleaner and it works so well. And we just have a house that just grows mold. You'd be like, hey, what's that kind of black stuff on the windowsill? And you're like, oh, yeah, it's black mold. And I don't seem to have problems with it. I know. It really is. As soon as we switch to this probiotic cleaner, we don't have that anymore at all. So it's a biofilm-disrupting probiotic that's in it. And so it helps control mold, dust mites, fleas. It's apparently even good at preventing bed bugs. They have a probiotic spray that you can sort of spray on things. It's just like water and probiotics, and it can be used like a deodorizer, but instead of like a perfumed aerosol that you might spray, it's just water and probiotics, so it just kills bacteria, and so you don't get whatever was smelling, making the smell in the first place. But I admit to having Kirkland brand disinfecting wipes in my kitchen because I do a mix. So I use the Crisil probiotic, cleaners when it makes sense. But when I'm cutting up a chicken, I admit I pull out the Kirkland wipes. So, so we do a mix, but I'm a really big fan of the Crisil products. They've been pretty cool. So they're not cheap.
To sum up, what we're trying to say is that this idea of not being a paleo perfectionist, which we've talked about before with food, and I'm sure we'll talk about someday in the future, all on its own. And we'll put a link in the show notes to Diane Sanfilippo from Balance Bites, awesome post about not being a paleo perfectionist, totally extends to beyond just food as well. Like, if you're adapting this to your lifestyle, there are places where you're going to apply the 80-20 rule, and Sarah and I are both using disinfecting wipes.
I can't even claim to be using Method brands, I have to say.
Well, we use seventh generation.
Yeah.
We get it subscribe and save via Amazon delivered to our door. It's so awesome. If you guys aren't using subscribe and save on Amazon for like your cleaning products and your toilet paper and your all that kind of stuff. I don't know why, because it's so cheap and they give you a discount and you don't have to shop for it.
And the more things you have that you subscribe to, the bigger the discount.
Yeah. So we have our seventh generation wipes on subscribe and save on Amazon, and it's like magic. They come and we use them and we feel clean. Okay. So what are some other things that paleo people do that are weird?
Ferment stuff.
That Jill from Fermented, she started it all.
She did, with the kombucha and the sauerkraut and the... she's got one for pastrami, doesn't she?
She's got one for everything.
She does.
Like, that's awesome. I'll tell you, I made the fermented lemons from her book.
Mm-hmm.
And I may or may not have made a gin lemonade with honey with those fermented lemon.
Ooh.
And nope. I may or may not highly recommend... that everyone do that.
I did her fermented garlic and then used those garlic cloves to make homemade salad dressings.
Mm.
And that is the bomb.
Yeah, the thing with those fermented garlic is that they are no joke. Like, you can't be bringing those around a first date.
No. They're still really, really potent. Like, raw garlic level potent. I mean, but they're awesome. And in salad dressings, I mean, I would normally put in a clove of garlic.
So, Sarah, why are we fermenting? Why are we making our food rot and eating smelly things?
It's the opposite of rotting. It's preservation. And we are doing this because a couple of main reasons. The first is when you ferment foods, you grow probiotics. It's beneficial bacteria that would normally live on or inside our bodies that are basically pre-digesting our food or our beverages for us. And as they grow, when we eat those foods, we are inoculating our digestive tracts with more variety of great beneficial bacteria. An average sauerkraut could have as many as 680 different strains of beneficial organisms in it. Something like kombucha or kefir would have typically about 40 different strains of beneficial bacteria and yeast. And if you compare that to, say, a probiotic capsule that you buy at the pharmacy, that might be 2 strains. So we're getting a huge amount of variety. And then the other great thing about having, especially fermented vegetables, is they're basically pre-digested in a very controlled way. And one of the things that fermentation does is it makes those foods easier to digest and it makes the nutrients in them more bioavailable. So it actually makes it easier for us to absorb all the nutrition that's in those foods. So that's a huge, huge benefit. And the last reason is it's yummy.
I mean, some people don't think it's yummy, though.
It's yummy.
I think if you're going to start, if you haven't ever done fermented things, I would highly suggest that you start out with like GT's mango kombucha and Bubby's relish. Like those, you know what I mean? Like start out from a store bought, like get used to the fermented flavor. Understand that, you know, like wine and beer are fermented and that's what gives it its weird flavor. The food is going to have that same kind of weirdness. But it's so valuable health-wise that it's worth figuring out what are the things that are fermented that you can tolerate, if not like. And then...
Well, and there's so many different choices. And even like if you look at sauerkraut, there's so many different ways that sauerkraut can be flavored. There's so many different vegetables you can mix in with it. If it's fermented for 5 days, it has a completely different flavor as if it's fermented for 15 or 5 months. I actually really like the idea of starting with a small batch. You don't need anything fancy at home. A jar and something to weigh everything down underneath the brine is all you need. And then you can taste it. If you just start with a small batch, there's kind of no, like, But you taste it as you go, and you're like, hey, day five, this is pretty good. And you're like, whoa, day seven, I don't know about this. I should have stopped at day five. I mean, that's a really fun science experiment.
Yeah, so...
So, Bubbies is what you recommend.
Yes. And it's not that I disagree with you that that's good. I just feel like, as a starting point, people should know, like, what a base level is before they start experimenting in their...
Yeah, I don't like Bubbies. I guess that's where I'm coming from.
Bubbies so, sauerkraut or Bubbies just in general?
Well, the only thing I've tried is their pickles, actually.
Oh.
They were horrid. I did not like them. I don't want to say they were horrid. I did not enjoy them. And I make my own homemade pickles. I like fermented pickles. I grew up on fermented pickles. That's what my grandfather used to make. And I really strongly didn't like them. And I don't know if it was like how long they were fermented for or the spices that were used. But I ended up throwing them in the compost.
Wow. So our boys love Bubbies for what that's worth. So, you know, to each their own. I don't, maybe you had a, you know, weird
maybe
batch.
It was a bad jar. I mean, yeah. That's totally possible.
But like they make a fermented relish that the boys, when I'm able to find it, go crazy for, like putting on their hot dogs and everything. Their eggs, they're like, I want to put this fermented food on everything. And it's awesome. And it's gone in like a heartbeat. And then, they really like the GT's fruity flavor kombuchas. And we did start making our own kombucha, but only after investing a small fortune in GT's and Reed's for like a year did we start doing that ourselves. And what was really cool about doing it ourselves is we started using a caffeine-free tea as a base, so I felt less guilty about giving it to the kids. So we used a rooibos, that's what we used.
Yeah.
And they really love making their own, like in the second ferment, you get to make the flavor. So they love doing that. But okay, enough of that. If you're looking for more fermented foods information, I would say Fermented, the cookbook by Jill, our friend from First Comes Health, is definitely the go-to source for that. And certainly, you know, the Price Pottinger and Weston A. Price Foundation and all that kind of stuff have more information about the health benefits on your site, on Chris Kresser's site, everywhere. You can definitely find out information about why we paleo people have this philosophy of eating smelly foods.
And again, you know, there are other sources of probiotics in your life. So if kombucha is not your thing or growing your own, fermenting your own sauerkraut's not your thing, like, that's cool.
Yeah, I try to tell people, I'm like, you know the Activa commercial where Jamie Lee Curtis is so excited to eat her little yogurt? That is what fermented foods is doing without all the other chemicals and sugar. Like, it's that, you know, the claims that the Activa commercial is making about all the health benefits for your gut, you're getting that in fermented foods or teas with, you know, high in antioxidants, high in nutrients, and it's also healing your gut. So that's how I try to sell it to people when they walk
That's a good pitch.
Yeah, when they walk into my office and they're cross-eyed because I'm eating something weird, I'm like, what? So, anything else? I mean, that's an hour.
That's an hour.
Are there other
weird things? Well, I did mention toe shoes. Do you wear toe shoes?
I used to, but I have to admit, I'm kind of on the other side of toe shoes now. When I see people wear them, I'm like, that was so 2 years ago.
Do you have another favorite natural movement shoe, or you've just decided that?
I do. I moved to different shoes for CrossFit. And that was the breaking point for me, is I used to use toe shoes just as like a walking shoe. And it worked really well for that. Problem was, when I'd go to like the farm, because we go to pick your own farms a lot, I would constantly get like hay and stuff poking me in my foot. And I was like, I don't know that this is really like the right shoe for me. So when I started CrossFit, I got two pairs of CrossFit-y shoes, one being a Reebok Nano, and then the other being a what they call a hybrid Ollie, like it's a lifting shoe kind of thing. and I really like the Reebok Nanos. So I have two pairs of those, and then I also have a pair of New Balance, like, minimal shoe. It's not the Minimus. Matt wears the Minimus. So we both like the New Balance and the Reebok minimal type shoe, but I just like a little more structure to my shoe than I was getting with the toe shoes. And I think that they now have so many different toe shoes that, like, the sole can come thicker, and they make, like, a boot, I think, now. Like, I think that there's a whole lot more options.
Yeah, I've got a pair of toe shoes, and the sole is fairly thick, but it's still... I have a pair of toe shoes, and I have a pair of... I think they're a Nike... I bought them at one of those big shoe box stores that has, like, every brand. They are a Reebok Natural Movement shoe. And the one is more substantial, and it definitely has, like, more sole to it. But I find myself wearing the toe shoes most frequently. I just find them really comfortable. But if it's, like, wet outside or muddy, then I wear the Reebok ones just because my foot won't get wet in them. Whereas in the toe shoes, if you walk through a puddle, then your foot's wet because, you know, they're natural shoes. So you get the full barefoot experience.
Yeah. Matt wears his full time, and he used to wear his toe shoes full time. And the reason he switched is for the exact reason that you're describing, which is that, like, you know, if he didn't know it was going to rain, and even just for a split second being out, like, the shoes got soaked and his feet got wet, and if it wasn't warm out, he was cold, and, you know, just the whole thing. But I believe that there are a lot more options. I'm sure Monica will link in the show notes, but the ones...
Oh, there's a ton of options now. There's, like, Innervates, and
I think that's why I think, like, oh, that's so 2 years ago, because for me personally, I wore them 2 years ago. There weren't as many options as there are now. And yeah. I still have them. I would wear them. Like, there's anything wrong with them. They didn't end up working for me long term. And the other thing, too, is that for a little while, I decided that I was going to, like, run. It was the worst decision. It was before I started training strongman, and I was like, I'm gonna do a 5k, and that's where the quote that we have on our website in the post, like, I want to be strong, comes from, where Matt's like, some people are made to go far, some people are made to go fast, some people are made to pick those other people up. Like, he was talking to me because I was complaining that I couldn't run. Part of what I did is I gave myself shin splints, because even in the toe shoe I can't run right. So by wearing, like, a slightly more thicker sole, like, even just a millimeter more in the sole, has helped my shins. Now I'm an idiot. I heel strike. What are you going to do?
I know the whole philosophy about toe striking, but I have never been able to do it. And I ran marathons and I heel striked the whole time.
Oh, you don't have, like, shin problems?
No, I have strong shins from all of the heel striking I'm doing.
I don't know that that's a good philosophy.
It's hormetic effects. Hormetic.
Okay. If you're going to start throwing science terms at me, you know I can't fight back.
It's adaptation.
Okay. Well, when your knee goes out, I'll be there for you.
Oh, thanks, man. I don't do very much running. I do a little bit because I enjoy it. But even if I do, it's usually tops, like, 2 miles. And I had to warm into it very, very slowly with the toe shoes, because it's a lot more impact. But that impact is also a very, very great, if you have a really nutrient-dense diet, stimulatory stress on bones to increase bone density, but you have to warm into it very, very slowly.
Yeah, I don't warm up. That's my problem for sure.
Well, no, but you also have to, train up your body. Yeah. You have to build up the strength, like, not just the muscle strength,
yeah,
but the tendon strength, ligament strength, bone strength over, like, weeks or months to be able to do that and not hurt yourself. So, you know, we're not, you know, we haven't worn natural movement shoes are a really new thing. And most of us, the muscles in our feet are not used to having to work. It's a whole new thing. So it's definitely something to warm into slowly.
Anything else we do that's weird that we want to explain to people?
Why? So you just mentioned CrossFit, though. Do you have to CrossFit if you're paleo?
You don't have to CrossFit if you're paleo. I was paleo for 2.5 years before I started CrossFitting. And honestly, I felt like I was drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. Like, I felt a little guilty about starting CrossFit because I took a little pride in the fact that we were like this family and we weren't part of the CrossFit community. We were like showing people you can be real paleo people without CrossFitting. And obviously, that's not the case anymore because I've been CrossFitting for a year in January, and
I
really, really like the strong, heavy lifting aspect of it, obviously, and I started doing that seriously just a couple of months ago. So, but no, certainly, like, we started paleo because of the health benefits, specifically for, you know, me and the kids and all the, you know, medical and health issues that we had, and saw such fabulous results that we kept going. And then, you know, we just naturally started moving our body more in the beginning as it felt comfortable. Like, I just wanted to be more active in general. You know, we would walk around the neighborhood on nice nights. We did handstand month. We, you know, just did kind of general physical activity that I hadn't done my whole life. I mean, I was always like a couch potato. So, I think once you have more energy and you're starting to lose weight, you're naturally just going to feel a little more energized and want to be physical. And it's up to you how you choose to do that. You know, Sarah, you do completely different things. Physicality wise.
Pretty much walking, hiking, and yoga.
Yeah.
And that's, I love it. It's what's sustainable for me. It's what makes me feel good. I throw in a little bit of running, but it's quite honestly, I haven't run in a couple of months, and we'll probably have to continue prioritizing sleep before my body can handle that for at least another month, I would expect. But. Yeah.
Well, and I think the thing that people want to know is, like, why is paleo and CrossFit so tightly knit? And I think the thing to understand is that Rob Wolf, you know, one of the godfathers of paleo, was closely tied into the CrossFit community years and years and years ago, and had a program that he worked with CrossFit HQ headquarters on to kind of give out to all of the CrossFit affiliates. And they ended up, you know, parting ways for reasons you can read about on the internet, full of drama or not or whatever. But neither here nor there, CrossFit has kept a lot of the philosophies of paleo, specifically a lot of the stuff that's actually coming out now, a little more like perfect health aligned, because the CrossFitters need more carbohydrate in their diet. And so a lot of them don't even consider themselves paleo, even though they really are, because they're eating potatoes and white rice. And so what ends up happening is that, you know, that the community, because they're really interested in performance and they're really interested in being as healthy and strong as they can be, they are much more open community to hearing about paleo and the benefits of it than just your average Joe who is like, oh, that's hard. You know, and it's like, yeah, I could see how that makes sense and I could see how it would change my life and my health, but it's hard, so I'm not going to do it. CrossFitters often are just a more captive audience and end up doing it because they're interested in being healthy and performing. And I think that's why there are so many CrossFitters that are paleo, but that doesn't mean that if you're paleo, you need to be a CrossFitter, and vice versa. I know plenty of CrossFitters, one in particular who I watched eat a Georgetown cupcake in the box, not even gluten-free. And I was like, really?
Awesome.
Really? So, you know, it's just to each their own. Everybody does, you know, what they're comfortable with in the gym, but certainly, yeah. Did I answer the question? I felt like I just lost it there at the end, but it is what it is.
No, I think you answered the question really well, because you talked about not just why you do CrossFit, but how people don't have to do CrossFit and how there's lots of people who don't do CrossFit and why there's even a connection with CrossFit in the beginning. And I think that's probably all the angles you can answer that question from. So, I think that's a wrap.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only one using disinfecting wipes, And probably at least one listener who totally fist pumped the air when they were like, yes, like they don't feel guilty about it either.
And there's probably at least one listener who's really angry at us.
I know.
For using we will definitely, wipes.
We'll get hate mail. It's fine. We'll deal with it.
It happens.
Different day, same story. It's all right. It'll be all right. Cool. Well, this has been your fifth philosophy show.
Fourth
philosophy show.
Philosophy part four.
And Sarah and I do have a different topic planned for next week. It's one we've been teasing you about for a really long time, but I'm not going to mention it because that'll jinx it.
So, yeah, not go there. Yeah.
But then we'll probably return to a philosophy show maybe like every other week or something, just because it's we've gotten really positive feedback from these types of shows, and it's pretty easy for us to just
and it's not the time of year where easy shows are really nice for us to be able to do.
Totally. So cool. Well, I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, or whenever you're listening to this, that you enjoy the rest of your whatever, and that you, if nothing else, learn from this philosophy that, you know, you take what you need from whatever lifestyle that you're living, for whatever you're living it for, and move on for what doesn't work or fit for you. I think that's been one of the biggest things that I've been trying to encourage everyone to do lately, is like, okay, if you don't like something, if it doesn't work for you, just move on. Like, don't linger. I think, you know, like the vegan trolls that we get. I don't know if you have vegan trolls, but
we
all have vegan trolls. And I'm like, honestly, I'm not on vegan sites like telling you about how you're B12 deficient and, you know, going to have health issues long term from all this. Like, why are you on my site telling me about how I'm going to have cholesterol issues? Like, it's just, you know, if it doesn't work for you, move on. It's much less stress in your life. It's much easier to just relax and do what you need to do and let it roll off your shoulder and move on. You don't need to linger. You don't need to worry about your disinfecting wipes. You don't need to, you know, freak out about the fact that you like toe shoes or you don't like toe shoes. Like, it doesn't matter. Just do what you need to do. And when you're ready to make an improvement, you know, research it. This show will have a lot of links about the recommendations and the things that Sarah and I do, but certainly there's a lot of information around the internet about how to have a healthy lifestyle, and do what works for you, and what doesn't, leave it and move on. You know, I have so much respect for Liz at Cave Girl Eats for like starting her own homestead. And whenever I'm able to listen to the Balanced by podcast and she talks about like her tick issues and her stray dog issues, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I can't even imagine. So like, it's not going to work for me. I'm a suburban working mom. Like, and that's what I've chosen as my life. That is my intent. It is my willful choice to live this life. But it doesn't mean that I can't like appreciate what Liz is doing and
yeah.
complete and utter respect for like Kendall of Primal Balance living her urban farm and stuff. I'm like totally blown away by the stuff that she accomplishes and her chickens and her tilapia
farm.
I mean, come on. Yeah. It's so awesome, but it's not going to work for me. Like, I just, you know. So, anyway.
I've got some herbs and some flower pots on the back patio.
I've got mint. I used to have herbs, but we made the mistake of putting mint with the herbs, so now we just have mint.
Yeah, mint kind of does that.
Yeah. And we did have a garden. Before we started writing books, we had a beautiful garden. We need to do that again. Maybe I'll prioritize that in the spring. You know what? I'll make my sister do it.
Oh, awesome idea.
We didn't have a show last week. I think I talked about Jackie moving in, right? Everybody
knows? Oh, yeah. It's been like a month now. What are you talking about?
Oh, my gosh. Her first recipe is on the blog. I posted it this week. Everybody should go check it out if you haven't already. We made candy cane cookies.
I saw those. They looked so cute.
I love my grandmother's like family recipe. We can't believe how close we got it. Like, crazy good. Jackie's first recipe is like, if that's her first paleo recipe, she needs to start planning her own cookbook soon, because they are spot on. So, perfect holiday cookies with the family for sure.
Awesome.
And you can go check out pictures of my sister if you need to.
And her very cute son.
Yes, her very cute son, my nephew, is also here. They've been on the blog already, though. Like, we did, I think, blueberry bars, whenever it was, when we went to Great Wolf Lodge and we talked about, like, what we were packing to go there and not eat all of the pizza and whatever that they serve. They were in that post where we were kind of prepping the food. And so I've been getting them on the paleo bandwagon. Even her son is, like, eating way more vegetables, and yes.
They're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, she's sitting next to me nodding her head saying he's taking it really well.
It's awesome.
We made mitza yesterday, like pizza, but with a meat crust. And we were actually working on recipes for the third cookbook. And we made, like, a cashew cheese sauce, and we put, you know, like, stuff on it, and adorably, he got a tummy ache in the afternoon, and I was talking to him, and I was like, you know, why, you know, what's going on, buddy? What can I do for you? And he's like, Aunt Stacy, I can't eat pizza anymore. I don't eat foods like that. And so I think it just made my tummy sick. And it, like, broke my heart. Like, he totally, I'm brainwashing the poor kid. Like, he even thought it was real pizza that had made his tummy sick. And I was like, oh, I'm glad you liked my recipe, but it wasn't real pizza, buddy. Like, the meat and vegetables probably didn't do this to you. But, yeah, so. Anyway. Go check it out. That post is live. And, my adorable expanded family. We posted our Christmas tree picture in that post and stuff. So we did a little bit of a catch-up blog post in that recipe as well. But if people need to be caught up, they should be subscribing to our newsletters, because 90% of the stuff that we talk about in the beginning of this show is covered in the newsletter.
Yeah, so, mine too.
Yes, yours too. So if you're not subscribed to our newsletter, you're seriously missing out, people. So there will be a giant, bold, flashing GIF in this show notes, like, subscribe to the newsletter here. And you should do that.
Can we actually do a flashing one? That'd be really cool.
I can't sign Monica up to that.
All right. So, okay, we're calling it a show. We're calling it a show. We're saying goodnight.
Yep.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Dropping science knowledge bombs.
Sweet.
See, he should just save little bits like that.
Instead of putting them in the show. Totally.
Well, no. I mean, you can just add it.
Put it in the show and then put it at the end.
Like, it's so awesome. Everybody wants to hear it twice. So let's just add it to the back again. Or you can start cutting when I'm insane.
And save it for the bloopers.
Up to him.
It's because it's a competition, Stacey.
It is. Everything in my life is a competition, Sarah.